Tune in to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, a Crime House original podcast to uncover the world's darkest secrets. Find Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes wherever you get your podcasts.
Washington 9. Ali, left side into the 5. He's in for a touchdown. Rasheed Ali. And the Ravens strike on a 13-play scoring drive to open the preseason finale.
So being honest, I did not watch the game on Saturday live. I did watch the condensed version late last night when I got back into town. And that guy, number 26 for the Ravens, Max, Rasheed Ali, I thought he was the most impressive player on the field. For what it's worth, he's a second-year running back from Marshall. He apparently is teetering. If they keep four backs, he'll be the fourth. If not, he's probably on the practice squad. Somebody should look into number 26 for Baltimore. Good morning, everybody. We are into a week in which we lead into Labor Day weekend, the first real college football weekend of the season, featuring heavyweight games, man. Texas, Ohio State next week at noon, and then Clemson hosting LSU Saturday night. Yeah, there is some really good football coming up this weekend. The Texas, Iowa State, Kansas State game from Dublin was a pretty good first football game of the year. I wagered on Hawaii the other night, laying 2.5 against Stanford. They had a walk-off field goal to win by 3. I did not give it out as a smell test selection, but the point spread moved 5 points in total over about a 2-week period. So some sharps thought that Hawaii was the right side. Turns out they were correct on this one. This from Dan. Actually, let me just mention, Ben Standing on the show today at 12. We'll talk 53-man projection. The cutdown is 4 o'clock tomorrow, and you'll hear my conversation, some of it, with Stanford Steve previewing the college football season a little bit later on in the show. This from Dan. Dan writes, Kevin, I agree with you on the preseason, but getting smoked in 3 games by 71 total points should make us pause, don't you think? ? Doesn't it say something about the team's readiness? ? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, Dan, for that. Dan, your math is correct. The team in the 3 losses in the preseason got outscored 109-38. That is kind of hard to do, you know, in the preseason. But it's not as hard when you decide not to play anybody. And that's what this team did. This team played, on offense anyway, its primary starters, including its quarterback, for 4 snaps. 4. So I don't personally think it says much about anything. I think, you know, if you want to go to the, well, you should be concerned about their depth because their depth got shredded in these games by others, you know, other teams, you know, the New England starters for the most part, to a certain extent, the Cincinnati starters and backups, but then not so much with the Ravens, obviously. Lamar Jackson was not on the field on Saturday afternoon. No, I think you guys know my opinion on all of this. I don't think any of it anymore translates to the regular season. The things that matter this time of year are health, and then things like contract negotiations with players who are hold-ins, and that particular hold-in was present Saturday at Northwest Field in Landover for the final preseason game. He was not there on Monday night for the Cincinnati game. He did not look like a happy camper, that's for sure. We will get to that, I promise you, on what appeared to be an isolated Terry McLaurin on the team's bench. That can be a little bit tricky because we don't see watching on TV unless you were there at the game. I don't know why you would be for a preseason 3rd game, but if you were, bless your heart, and maybe you were watching the Terry McLaurin back and forth with teammates and saw a lot more interaction. But we'll get to that because I do want your thoughts on what that said to you and where the current state of Terry and team are. But in terms of these three preseason games and losing three by an average of basically 24 points per game, just doesn't mean much to me. I don't think that there is any sort of state of panic or state of concern in Ashburn. They didn't play the players who are going to play in the games for the most part. We saw some players. We saw Chris Rodriguez out there on Saturday against Baltimore. I just will tell you, I don't think, based on just a couple of conversations that I had, because I was actually interested in the fact that Bill Merritt, Krosky Merritt, was actually not, you know, in the game on Saturday, but Chris Rodriguez was. Could that be a tell that really it's Krosky Merritt that they are targeting as the number one back for the opener against the Giants and the guy that will be the lead back for the replacement, Brian Robinson Jr., as a replacement for Brian Robinson Jr., who did get traded after the show the other day. And I thought, by the way, I'll just interject on this right now, I thought Adam Peters did well to get a sixth-round pick back for Brian Robinson Jr. Clearly, that means more than one team was interested, because if there weren't more than one team interested, then the 49ers would have just waited, perhaps, for him to get cut, although they wouldn't have had the first choice off the waiver wire. So it doesn't automatically mean that more than one team was interested. Remember with the Carson Wentz trade, which was just an absolute fleecing a few years ago when Washington and Indy got together for that deal. It was very apparent to most of the league that Carson Wentz was going to get released from the team in Indianapolis. And Washington traded a lot for him anyway and picked up, you know, which was the biggest sin of the deal, which was picking up the entirety of the contract rather than making Indy eat at least half of it. This was not the sharpest personnel group, management group under Rivera. Rivera always was a decent coach. I know most of you don't agree with that, but it is true. Ron Rivera was always a decent coach wherever he was. I think he was kind of checked out here towards the end. But as a general manager, it was an utter disaster. Jamin Davis got released over the weekend, if you were paying attention to that. Just the hits keep coming with his drafts while he was here as, you know, the dual purposed head coach and general manager. But I thought Adam Peters did well. Look, there is some risk with this. You know, this is what I've said about Brian Robinson Jr. for a while now. I don't think he's great, but I don't think he's terrible. I know that a lot of the advanced numbers are not very kind to him, whether it's DVOA or a few others. But I've never thought of Brian Robinson Jr. as being a terrible back. I've thought of him as being somewhere in the middle of the pack of the primary lead backs in the NFL. You know, far from being the best you can get, and they should have always been looking to upgrade on that position. But when you trade with the 49ers, you are trading with a team that knows running backs. Kyle Shanahan knows running backs. You know, that guy Garendo, the guy Jordan James that they drafted, it'll be interesting to see what he is. But, you know, you're taking a guy that's pretty good, okay. Let's just say, you know, he is a middle-of-the-pack starting running back in the NFL, and you're rolling the dice on some guys that you clearly believe in, and I'm with them on this. I'm totally fine with it. I thought right when the season ended last year, there was a good chance they would try to replace Brian Robinson Jr. They didn't replace him with a high draft choice, you know, a night two pick or an early day three pick, but they had Chris Rodriguez coming back, and they clearly feel like Rodriguez and his conditioning efforts have improved, the maturity's improved, because clearly he's got some running skills, and I thought he looked good against Baltimore's backups the other day, but I was kind of given an indication that Krosky Merritt, they may have just been kind of protecting him, you know, injury-wise. He had the shoulder from a few weeks ago. Then he played last week into the second half on Monday night. But to turn him around so quickly on a very short week, they felt like it was better to rest him since he did have that injury. And Chris Rodriguez got 5 carries for 30-some yards and actually looked really good. Some gaping holes. I don't know that there's a lot to read into that, is what I'm saying about who will be the starting running back, the guy in the huddle on the first and 10 of the season, you know, 2 weeks from yesterday on September 7th. Against the Giants. You know, it could be, you know, like we've talked about, it could be a by committee situation where both Rodriguez and Kroski Merritt, you know, along with Debo getting some carries, along with Eckler getting some carries, that they just, you know, it'll be a fluid situation until maybe somebody takes that job because of performance, or maybe we see, you know, a mixing and matching all season long. We'll see. But with Brian Robinson Jr., there is some risk that you don't get the performance that you got from Brian Robinson Jr., but it's not worth the $3.4 million and, by the way, turning down what they ended up getting, which is a sixth-round pick. So I think Adam Peters did well on that. But overall, the preseason, thankfully, is over. It is dreadful, and the discussion around it for every team and nationally just about the league. I mean, have you seen this stuff coming out about Shedeur Sanders, that somehow the Browns and Kevin Stefanski are sabotaging Shedeur Sanders? Lots of racial allegations with this one. Meantime, the quarterback that came in for him is black. Tyler Huntley. Think about the Browns. I was talking to a friend of mine about this last night because he brought it up to me. He said, have you been following this Shedeur Sanders thing? And then I kind of went online and got caught up. And I guess he was pretty horrendous after being pretty good in the first preseason game. 5 sacks in like 14 snaps or whatever it was. But, you know, it's preseason and they're not game planning. And he's playing with backups and against backups. I mean, it's really, you know, they know what Shedeur Sanders is based on what they've seen in practices, more so than even in the games. And they had an evaluation of him coming out. But this is a franchise that gave Deshaun Watson, off of 40-some, you know, allegations of sexual assault, the largest guaranteed contract in the history of the league. Yeah, I don't think that's the issue. This is some of the silly season, you know, August conversation that I guess you have to have to try to generate a reaction on social media or elsewhere. I think Shedeur Sanders is a guy who was evaluated by much of the NFL as a player that was not worthy of going in the first round, maybe worthy of going on night 2 at some point, but was the juice worth the squeeze? And this is a perfect example of, was the juice worth the squeeze? Not at a second or third round level. Not if you're going to have this over preseason action. Stefanski's, you know, calling terrible plays for him. He's got the, you know, the wrong guys. No, he had the third stringers and the fourth stringers in there because that's what Shedeur Sanders is. Insane conversation around Shedeur Sanders. I have no idea if Shedeur Sanders is going to be an NFL quarterback. I was not a big fan of him coming out. I thought he held it too long. I thought he didn't see it quickly enough. I do think he throws a pretty ball. I think he is a better sort of off-schedule playmaker than maybe his athleticism gets credit for, because he's not super athletic, not like his father by any stretch of the imagination. In most situations, a fifth-round pick, there would be zero discussion about this. But Cleveland knew. And remember, Dylan Gabriel, who apparently was in there with higher-level depth chart guys, was actually higher on the depth chart than Shedeur Sanders. Was drafted 2 rounds before Shedeur Sanders. We're not going to know about Shedeur Sanders for a while. And even if Cleveland were to release him, that would be a stunner. And that would be a headline maker. Somebody will give him an opportunity. And even if he got released and had to go to the CFL, and years on quarterbacks, man, takes a long time to know for sure. On a lot of them. On some of them, it doesn't take much time. I'll tell you what, man, I don't think it takes much time to know on Sam Hartman. Sam Hartman doesn't look like an NFL caliber quarterback because of his arm. You know, you got to be able to throw the football at the NFL level to a certain, you know, standard, or doesn't matter all the other stuff you're able to do. I have some thoughts, actually, from the game. I have some notes on the game that I'm gonna rip through them very quickly. And then we'll get to, with Ben, the 53-man, you know, projection, because Ben's really into it. And those back-end decisions will be interesting for sure. Again, I thought the most impressive player, and I would keep an eye on this guy, Rasheen Ali, the running back, because I think Ravens fans actually understand he's really talented. But remember, they've got Keaton Mitchell back in Baltimore as well, off that serious knee injury from, what, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago now. And so there may not be a spot. This guy is an NFL back. You can tell, and you can tell if you look back and watch some of the film from him. So I thought Rodriguez, you know, looked good for whatever it's worth. He's got better vision than I think people give him credit for. He's obviously a good power back. It's going to be tough for that first contact to bring him down more times than not. I like Chris Rodriguez. I think we all do. Number 51 keeps, you know, I mentioned him last week. I don't know if he's going to make the team. I'll ask Ben if he's going to make the team. But I think number 51, Cahoe, the linebacker. Remember, Max, I said, I don't know who that is, but he really kind of stood out in the game against Cincinnati. I thought he stood out again.
Yeah, Dan Quinn thought the same. He mentioned it in his presser, too.
He did? I haven't heard Quinn's press conference.
They're big fans of Ali Cahoe right now.
Okay, so that guy just has a level of energy and a level of bringing it as a tackler that I love. Neither team tackled very well early in the game. I see what they see in Jordan McGee. You know, Jordan McGee, number 58, was on the field. You can see what they're excited about with Jordan McGee. He's instinctive, he's athletic, and he will tackle. He's got to stay healthy to get those opportunities on the field. I like number 16, the receiver. I liked him in that first game. I liked him the other day. I think he looks like an NFL receiver. That's all you can say, because he's not playing against guys who are going to be in the NFL. I just think his size and his hands and the way he comes out of breaks, the way he attacks the ball, he looks to me like an NFL receiver, Ja'Cory Brooks out of Louisville. Remember, they gave him some cash as an undrafted free agent. I don't know if there's going to be a spot on the team for him or not. You know, Yankoff, number 41, who had the one really interesting play of the game, the 52-yard catch and run in the first half. He's very athletic. He played quarterback. There's a lot of things that Yankoff, I think, can do, and I think it's one of the reasons he's still with them. I think they believe that there's something there with Yankoff. Will that cost Sinnott his job? I don't think so. I think Sinnott makes the final roster. But I would not think that this would be a group that would cut ties with a player quickly, even if they drafted him and had belief in the player, if they now know after two off seasons he can't play. And I'm looking at Sinnott. I'm looking at McCaffrey. I don't think they're going to end up coming to those conclusions based on, certainly not based on the preseason games. Luke McCaffrey got a number of touches in the game. I don't know. Luke McCaffrey last year, when he was in there, appeared to at times get separation. But I know that they don't think his route running is refined yet or polished yet. But we'll see. Who else did I write down from the game? I mean, again, you know, Hartman, I just don't see him. He's not a third string quarterback. Is Josh Johnson the third string quarterback? I tell you one thing, and remind me of this, Max. We need to ask Ben about Mariota's health. Is Mariota going to be ready for the opener against the Giants? Because if not, who do you go into that game as a backup? It would have to be Josh Johnson. It would have to be, unless they're going to sign somebody. I saw somebody tweet out, and I don't know who it was, that Jeff Driskel, who, remember, was the backup early in the season last year because Mariota was banged up as well, that he's not been signed by anybody. I mean, they could technically bring him back if they are uncomfortable with Hartman and Johnson and Mariota isn't ready to go. Got to have a backup quarterback, people, in the NFL. You have to have one. Mariota is more than an acceptable backup. He's a low-end starter for still, I think, in this league. Very low-end, very back, you know, quarter, bottom quarter of the league. But if he's not ready, be interesting. Oh, one other thing, obviously. Matt Gay missed a long field goal. Made one, missed one. Look, they gave him basically $4.5 million. He's going to get an opportunity in the regular season. If you're thinking they're going to bring in some challengers here over the final week and a half, they might, but they're going with Matt Gay unless something's wrong with him. And they're going to give him, you know, regular season games before they, you know, start seriously thinking about replacing him. They liked him. They gave him, you know, basically $4.5 million guaranteed. He's going to be their kicker. I'd be shocked unless they've noticed something that's wrong. But he did nail the 47-yarder. So what did that make him? He missed two in the preseason, right? I think it made him 2 for 4 in the preseason, right?
Sounds right.
He missed one against the Patriots, and then he made one last week, a short one last week, didn't miss one last week, and then he missed one and made one yesterday. So he said 4 attempts. I think it's 2 for 4 in the preseason. But, you know, as important is what did he do in, you know, how did he look when he was out there practicing? How are his kickoffs? Because this year, the team got a head start on this. You know, they forced returns last year kicking into the landing zone. They wanted to establish a physicality about their team with special teams, and they did that last year, I thought, successfully. All right. You know, there are two topics here today. One is, number one, does anything alarm you about getting outscored by 71 points in 3 preseason games? For me, the answer is nada. If you want to weigh in on that, that's fine. But to me, the big topic is still Terry McLaurin. So he shows up for the game on Saturday. You see a couple of those shots with him sort of isolated on the bench, except for Bobby Wagner. You know, he did not have the most joyous of expressions when the camera hit him. Now, again, this is tricky. You know, we're not sitting there watching the entire Terry McLaurin experience on the bench, you know, during this final preseason game, unless you are there with binoculars on him or just watching him from the stadium. Adam Schefter again this morning on Get Up on the show with Greenberg suggested that they are no closer than they have been. You know, I think Albert Breer the other day said that there has been progress made. Believe what you want to believe. My belief is if it doesn't happen this week or by, like, say, the end of this upcoming weekend, and that would include Labor Day, that the offer gets pulled and they say, it's time for you to either play or not play, but the offer's done. This has, you know, gotten to the point where you can see, I think, I'm feeling that Terry has gone from hurt, probably from frustration and anger to hurt, which we heard during the Eastern Motors press conference, to a belief that that hurt would be, you know, satisfied because early on, it seemed like there were a lot of people in his corner and he was out for the first days of camp and fans were going nuts. But, you know, if you're on social media, and he shouldn't be, but the tide has turned. I don't think there's any question about it. I think that the number of fans that are now, you know, upset with him, that number has grown significantly from those early, early days of training camp on, you know, July 22nd, that particular week, the Wednesday and Thursday of that week. And I think now he is feeling true hurt and maybe even like, hey, am I messing this up? He is messing it up big time, in my opinion. He and his agent, I have to be very specific to that, because his agent, Buddy Baker, I think has played this all wrong. You cannot give your client and then the team you're negotiating with the thought that you're not coming off the belief that, A, he's an elite receiver in the league, that age 30 doesn't matter, and, oh, by the way, do you know what he's done for this organization over the last several years? That was not a hand that was received very well. And from that moment, even if you want to believe that Washington's first offer was too low, Washington has a belief on what his value is. You know, Mike Gennetti, who runs Spot Rack, the site that tracks all player contracts, you know, tracks the salary cap numbers, you know, per team. He put out a tweet the other day. It was after the show, in which he believes essentially fair market value for Terry McLaurin is 3 years, $82.5 million, $27.5 million a year, and that would be in the that would be with $50 million guaranteed, which is exactly what we've kind of been talking about in terms of the guaranteed money, $50 million guaranteed. I would imagine that that offer of somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 million guaranteed and something in the neighborhood of 27 to 28 AAV isn't going to be there for much longer. And they're going to have to make a decision to cave. To me, it would be the right decision. It's the only decision for him if, you know, additional generational wealth matters. If a level of, you know, concern about what he might look back on, this opportunity that comes and goes, if it does, could be the biggest professional mistake of his career, aided by his agent, who is also somebody that I think Terry very much believes in. But Terry's a grown-up. Terry's smart. We know that. The team's not budging. They're not going anywhere near a DK Metcalf deal. That's not happening. And as I've said many times, to me, common sense says that a smart guy like Terry McLaurin will at some point say, I'm not going to get this opportunity more likely than not next year or the year after that. This is the last and best opportunity to put this kind of money into my pocket, guaranteed. Even if next year I have a really good season and they franchise tag me 28, 29, 30 million. That number kind of keeps going around. It'll depend, and we'll know it definitively at the end of this upcoming season. You know, you add that to what he's going to earn this year, and it's still short of the $50 million guaranteed. So there's no guarantee of a franchise tag, right? There's no guarantee of that at all. Washington could choose to play hardball next year if he doesn't have a great season and say, we're interested now in a very short-term contract extension worth, you know, $17, $18 million a year for 2 years with $25 guaranteed. But we're not interested in paying you a 1 year, $28, $29, $30 million franchise tag. We may be interested in using it on somebody else. This could be, you know, the last and best, as I've suggested, for much of the summer. And for me, I think that it's coming back, and he's coming back with his agent, and that a deal gets done before the end of day Labor Day. That's my belief. Will it happen? I don't know. If it doesn't happen, he's got to play on the final year of his deal. Holding out would potentially be even more disastrous. But I do think the team, as I said last week, maybe even the week before, I think the team's had it, and I think at some point that offer, whatever it is that's on the table, is going to get pulled, and that there's an expiration date on that offer. All right, that's where I think we should start. The preseason stuff, are you really alarmed by a 109-38 score differential in three games? You shouldn't be. Jaden Daniels took four snaps, and by the way, in those four snaps, they went 70-some yards and scored a touchdown with him running one in. I'm not concerned at all. I'm really not even concerned about the depth We won't know that until real games are played against real opponents with game plans and with stakes, real stakes. So I think we should start with Terry. What did you see with Terry on Saturday? Did you see a dejected, I'm not playing for this team, I'm here. Remember, this upcoming week's going to be big. Whatever this ramp-up period that Dan Quinn's referred to, whatever this, you know, ready-to-play period is, when they want him on that grass practicing, you know, and maybe risking something, and he's not there, that's when it'll get really ugly. So we'll see what happens this week. But I still believe it's going to happen. Maybe naively at this point, because it's gone on much longer than I thought. But it would be really, really, I think, be a big error on Terry's part not to sign a guaranteed deal worth $50 million, if that offer is still on the table. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What did you see with sort of the shot of Terry being a bit isolated? Again, I think that can be tricky. Isolated, other than Wagner. And how do you think it does get resolved? We've got a big week upcoming, that is for sure. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, phone lines open, 301-230-0980.
Listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes now to uncover the world's darkest truths. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Sam Howell traded again, traded to the Eagles from the Vikings. I said Sam Howell getting traded to the Vikings by the Seahawks in the offseason was the best thing for Sam Howell, because if Kevin O'Connell can't do it with him, then nobody can. Well, apparently Kevin O'Connell can't do it with him. But Philadelphia will take a shot with him, I would assume, as the third-string quarterback behind Tanner McKee and Jalen Hurts. Yeah, I'm not going to – we've already done the, you know, those of you that wanted Sam Howell around and just build out around him a segment. Couldn't do that even if you didn't have the number two pick. As long as you had a top 10 to top, you know, 12 pick with the quarterbacks that were in the draft last year, you had to take a swing at one of them, because what was absolutely clear from 2023 is that Sam Howell was not a starting quarterback in the NFL. The chances he was going to be a starting quarterback heading into that season were slim. After that season, it was obvious that he was not going to be that. Anyway, there was something else. So that Sam Howell, Carson Wentz got signed in Minnesota. Tell you what, if Kevin O'Connell can't make Carson Wentz work, nobody can. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What was your reaction to the view of Terry McLaurin on the sideline? He was present at the game, which is, I think, better than not being present. He seemed to be isolated, but again, I would say that that is a very tricky thing to evaluate if you watch the game on TV. I think what's obvious, and it's been obvious going back to pre-Eastern Motors, but for sure Eastern Motors press conference, he's just very hurt about this whole thing. He really believed heading into this thing that he was going to be valued at a certain level in terms of his wide receiver ranking, that the age would not play a role because of what he described in that Eastern Motors press conference, that he's a young 30, if you will, because he doesn't have as much tread on the tires as other 30-year-old receivers, and that somehow the organization would be appreciative for what he had done, you know, in the years before Adam Peters and Dan Quinn got here, before even Josh Harris and the new ownership got here. And then, you know, his role in helping change the culture last year. I think there's some level of understanding that Terry being a part of this locker room is a plus-plus. And I think that's one of the reasons they're offering him a contract extension when they don't have to, and maybe even willing to offer a little bit more than they even think should be offered. That's the thing that I think, and I mentioned this like a week and a half ago, the perspective that they have is more likely not, what are you guys talking about? We don't have to do this. We are doing this because we do like him, and we do want him, and we do want to reward him, and we do want him a part of the locker room, but we don't have to do this. And in some ways, it would be better for us financially if we didn't do it. What did you read into Terry McLaurin sideline? At least he wasn't Micah Parsons laying down on the training table. That situation is hideous. Keith and Brandywine, kick it off for us. Go ahead.
Hey, Kevin. Now, I had the binoculars on him a lot on the sideline at the game, and he wasn't happy, but most of the time he was isolated. I know he wasn't talking to the guys who were playing in the game at all, and probably the guys like Jaden Daniels. Like, I watched him, a few guys, with a little chit-chat with everybody every now and again, but maybe he's upset about – not upset, but thinking, doing a lot of thinking about, I need to be out there. But bottom line is, I'm not happy with this, man. I think he's offsetting everything. I think that the timing with him and Jaden Daniels was coming there, and now it's not there, and it's not going to be there by the Giants game. The Giants aren't going to be a pushover, and because we never beat them by more than 7 points if we beat them. So I think that this is going to be a messed up thing starting the season off. And correct me, I could have sworn that when I told you weeks ago, I said his agent is advising him wrong. And then when we hung up the phone, I could have sworn you said something about, well, how can I say that this agent is professional? Maybe I could be wrong, but when I got to the radio, I could have sworn you said something about his agent, is a professional,
No, I very much early on suggested, because I was told that the agent was, inexperienced in large deals like this, so that was a part of the issue. I mean, we're going back past a month. I think you heard that incorrectly. But thanks, Keith, for the call. Appreciate it. 301-230-0980. Keith watched him with binoculars and said it was an isolation situation for much of it. You have to think why was he isolated? Why weren't teammates, hovering over him? Why weren't they lined up to talk to him? Are they frustrated with this? I don't know. That part of it, the locker room dynamic with Terry right now, I think he's a highly respected player, always has been. Jaden wants him out there. Look, the receiver situation is not promising without him. But again, they're going to be with him. But this week is big, man. The next big, event will be when the expectation in this ramp-up schedule for Terry is for him to be on the field. And if he isn't on the field, or if he refuses to participate in what they want him to participate in, then the team's got some options in terms of treating him as a true holdout rather than a hold-in. Let's go to Skip. Skip, what was your kind of gut reaction to seeing Terry sort of isolated on the bench minus the back and forth with Bobby Wagner?
Hey, Kevin. I think he was very unhappy about even being there. Okay? I don't think he wanted to be there. I think we could talk about Buddy Baker and his inexperience and all that, but I think this is totally driven by Terry. I think Terry's sees his value totally different from the team. And at this point, it's not even about Team Terry or Team Adam Peters. It's about, okay, let's get down to the basic, who has the leverage. And, of course, like you say, the team has the leverage. And this week is critical. The only leverage Terry has is they would like to start off with him, at least in camp for about 10 days. Like you said, Wednesday is a key day if he could be there. But certainly I agree with you by next week. And if he doesn't show, then his value to what they want goes down. So his leverage really ends this week. So
he doesn't have any leverage.
He has a decision to make.
He doesn't have any leverage.
Right. Well, he does. He has the leverage of, you guys really would like me to be there. And if we can work this out, it would be great. We could get a good start. Okay, it's already almost, it's, if he was there on Wednesday, that would be great. That I'm not saying it's a lot of leverage, Kevin, But
By the way, the Wednesday I think I've been talking about is the first what they call install day, first legitimate practice next Wednesday before the Giant game. This week isn't the Giant game,
oh, okay.
right? It's
okay.
yeah.
Oh,
now,
all right.
What's
so,
big this week is whatever the plan is practice-wise, whatever the plan is for him, as Quinn's talked about the ramp-up period or
right.
the return-to-play period for him. Whenever that return-to-play period hits, yeah, today is the day that Terry needs to be on the field. He needs to be on grass, as Cliff Kingsbury's called it. He better be on grass, or then you wonder what the team's reaction will be. Because at that point, he is no longer a hold-in. He's legitimately a hold-out.
So I totally agree with you about that. So I think the last thing he's going to do is play on the current deal. I think he's going to either take that $50 million, okay?
Because if that's what it is. Yeah, if that's what it is. Yeah.
Right, I think you're right about that. Now, can they give him incentives? Like, can they say, okay, he can say, I'll accept the deal that you're offering, but can you give me incentives that if I meet certain numbers?
Sure.
That's the deal then. That's the deal that he should go for. Because I do think, I looked at the numbers. You mentioned Marvin Harrison, and I'm not comparing Terry to Marvin Harrison. But Marvin Harrison started his career at the age of 24 just like Terry. In fact, they're almost, he was born in August. Marvin Harrison's numbers, because he didn't have Peyton Manning his first 3 years, they didn't go up until Peyton Manning came. And so he had three great years when Peyton Manning's first 3 years. Then he had another three great years. So he was 9 years into his career, still having great numbers. Terry can be
Hall
compared.
Hall of Famer we're talking about, remember.
Well, no, I'm not saying Terry's a Hall of Famer, but I'm saying his longevity and his body type, the fact that, in life, people are, there's young 30s or young 40s, people are, they.
I think Terry's got a couple good years left in him, for sure.
Well, no, he could be in the middle of his career. He could have a 12-year career, and this could be the middle of his peak year, so he could have another three really good years, just like Marvin Harrison.
Right.
And you can look it up. Okay.
Yeah, that's not what the analytics say on the position.
Well, you got to
team...
do deep dive analytics, Kevin. You can't just say 30 is a magic number. You got to look at the
30 is not the magic number. Actually, 31 is post 31, and the team relying on some of those analytics, and I'm sure they know what Marvin Harrison did, during his career, and what Jerry Rice did during his career. Post 31.
There are others that have done the same who had peak years. They've had peak years after 30. They've had like three peak years after 30. There are a lot of examples of that. I think the Junkies did a whole series on that where they named some of the players. And I think Terry falls within that in terms of body type, speed. He has certain elite traits. He has elite speed. He also contested catches. He was number one.
Yep.
Okay. So
and part of that is because he's not very good at getting separation. You understand that, right?
I understand that.
He's very low on separation.
Right. He doesn't have the wiggle that some of these really elite receivers have.
Because he's not an elite receiver.
No, that's what I'm saying. He does not have that. But he's the next best thing.
Okay.
And for us, we really need him in order to make a Super Bowl run.
Thanks. Appreciate it, as always, Skip. 301-230-0980. Bob, Mark, Phil, everybody on hold. Stay there. We've got a line open as well, 301-230-0980. What did you make of Terry being somewhat isolated on the bench, or maybe very isolated, minus the back and forth there with Bobby Wagner? Had a caller call in, say he was at the game, had binoculars on Terry the whole time, and that's kind of what it was during much of the game. What do you think's going through his mind right now? My belief is he's going to get to the point where he's pissed. He's hurt, he's angry, he's all of those things, but he's a grown-up, and he understands that this deal is the best offer he will ever have a chance to sign for the rest of his career, and he'll sign it. That's my guess. I hope it works out that way, too. 301-230-0980, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, and the team980.com.
All right, happy Monday, everybody. It is August 25th. Tommy Fleetwood wins his first event in the PGA after 164 career starts. No better time than to do it during the championship. He wins, finishing 2-under on the day, 18-under through 72 holes of action. And Cal Raleigh sets the new home run record for catchers, hitting his 48th and 49th home runs yesterday against the Athletics to MVP chance. Said he didn't even hear him. Plus the Nats, they lose their weekend series to the Phillies. A tough day for Jake Irvin as he only makes it through 2 1/3 innings, giving up 6 hits and all 3 runs scored in the game. Lights out performance for Ranger Suarez, giving up only 3 hits, 2 of which came from Jacob Young through 7 innings. The Nats fall by a score of 3-2. The Nats will make their trip up to the Big Apple to take on the New York Yankees tonight. Brad Lord on the mound versus Cam Schlittler. First pitch at 7:05. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:35 on the Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Obsessed with true crime cults or conspiracy theories? Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes is a weekly podcast from Crime House and Pave Studios that dives into the darkest corners of human behavior. Every Wednesday, we uncover the true stories behind the world's most shocking crimes, deadly ideologies, and secret plots. Follow and listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
From George, you keep saying he has to play. Of course he doesn't have to play. Do you remember Emmett Smith? Yeah, the Emmett Smith comparison's been drawn about 100 times during the last 3 weeks, George. Again, they were coming off a Super Bowl, and Emmett Smith was on his way to becoming a Hall of Fame player. Big difference. But, you know, the idea that in 4 days, basically, you know, Sunday to Thursday night, that they could look horrible on offense and somehow Terry could actually extract the first amount of leverage in the negotiation out of the team's regular season performance. This is something we've talked about during the summer, that I never thought that there was any way for him to gain leverage from preseason games or even from a joint practice or any other practices. They got to see it in an actual game where the players are playing for the entirety of the game, where Jaden Daniels and that offense completely comes to a screeching halt without 17 in the game. At that point, maybe, and maybe that's what they're thinking. Maybe that's their last, that is a true Hail Mary. Like, you know, they're not going to be what they were last year without me. They're going to realize it after 2 weeks, and I'm going to get $33 million a year and $70 million guaranteed. Maybe. I would not bet on that, though. And I think if they're betting on that, two things are in play here. One, it's a big risk to think that without Terry McLaurin, the offense is just going to come to a screeching halt. I don't think that's true. I think as long as number five's out there, I think they will have success. Again, I think they're better with Terry. I think they've got a chance to win more games and be a better offense with Terry and go deeper into the postseason with him rather than without him. But I don't think this becomes like a bottom third of the league offense without him in it. I think five's the most important player. And so far, you know, he's healthy and will be available for the regular season. And then the other part of that is somehow thinking that if things really looked horrible without him, that that would get the team to budge. I don't know. We've heard about Adam Peters, incredibly stubborn. And I thought that last week, Joel Corey made the most interesting point with us, and that was, you know, sometimes the worst, you know, position to be in as a player is the first major deal negotiated by a new regime, because they're trying to basically create the what we're going to be as negotiators. We're not getting fleeced. We're not overpaying. This isn't the place to come and get 20% above retail. You know, and unfortunately, Terry's that first in line. If they had a history of being solid negotiators, but fair negotiators, not overpaying, but not underpaying, then maybe they could have had more leeway in this negotiation. Let's go to Bob in Tennessee. Bob, thanks for holding. What was your reaction to seeing Terry somewhat isolated on the sideline in the final preseason game against Baltimore?
Hey, Kevin. Good morning. And a special shout-out to your producer, Max. He's awesome.
Max is great.
I talked to him for a few minutes before I even got on the air. Hey, y'all, look, maybe this might not be the best analogy, but I look at what Terry's doing a little bit like do you remember that play? You're old enough to remember that play, the no Danny no, go for it on fourth down and lose it.
December 1983, well, I certainly do.
I think that Danny White was planning on pretending to hike the ball. He was going to do everything he could to get us to jump offside. Once he began to think, oh, wait a minute, I think I can make this play, or I think my running back can make this play, that's when Tom Landry, by the way, that's my last name too, by the way, on the sideline, had realized he is making the most fatal mistake of their entire season. And he yelled at him, no, he went anyway. Terry McLaurin, if he was, not that he's not smart, I'll preface that, but if his agent and him got together and said, we're going to push Adam Peters to the wall right at the last second, as get as much as we possibly can and then sign it and then get the work that needs to be done, that wouldn't be a problem for me whatsoever. In fact, that's what we do almost every game to get teams to jump off sides. You don't, in certain situations, you can't go for it when all the stakes, your entire future rides on that one play. He may not get that chance ever again.
It's a good call, Bob. I mean, the analogy is a bit of a reach, but I get what you're saying, and I would add this to it. You know, I think when all of us have some years of experience, personally, professionally, and otherwise, to sort of draw on in these situations, not as professional athletes, but in conversations with employers about compensation, etc. Nothing's ever broken completely, especially if you're a valuable person. Terry's valuable, okay? He may feel now like, oh my God, I can't fix this, and now I got to really dig my heels in, and I got to, you know, hit this Hail Mary on maybe they'll end up giving it to me if the team stinks in the first two games if I hold out, or whatever it is. But no, things can always be repaired. Things are never as bleak as they appear, or more times than not, they're not. And in this particular situation, this is projecting majorly, I understand, but I could see a 30-year-old, he's still a young person, going through this first major contract negotiation, disappointment, frustration, angst, you know, all of it, you know. But at the end of the day, they really like you. You really liked playing for them. You can make a mistake or two or three along the way, and it can be forgiven. And by the way, they can make a mistake or two along the way, and you can forgive them. Now, if they're so far apart, you know, I still think Terry, no matter how far apart they are, I just don't see why anybody advising him would say, don't worry about it, you'll have the same chance or even a better chance next year. That's just not logical at this point.
No, it isn't.
And so I do think, you know, sometimes people, young people, they get so distraught. Man, sometimes the next day is just a much better day. You just got to keep showing up. You got to keep swinging. You got to hang in there. And you can't be, you know, the emotional side of business is tough, but it's easy to say, don't let emotions get involved in business. It's just business. That's hard for young people. Hard.
And for old people, too.
And for old people, too. But in his first go-round with this, you know, I think there have been some mistakes made by his agent and him, but they're not insurmountable. They're not unfixable. Of course they can be fixed. Thanks, Bob, for the call.
Exactly.
Appreciate that. Mark, Billy, David, everybody stay on hold. We'll do this for another quick segment after the break. What did you make of Terry's sort of isolation on the sideline for the preseason finale against Baltimore? Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the team980.com.
Listen to Conspiracy Theories, Cults, and Crimes now to uncover the world's darkest truths. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.